Okay, good Erev Shabbos, everybody. I think the recording is set up, and we're ready to start the shiur. The title of today's shiur is Jealousy, the Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. The theme of jealousy comes up a couple of times in this week's parsha, and I thought that it would be interesting to explore how it comes up and what it means to all of us. So we start with a very interesting Or HaChaim on the Pasuk Vayhi Bayom HaShemini. Now, as probably some of you are familiar from the Megillah, Chazal understand that when it says Vayhi is a Lashon of Tzar. It's a Lashon of pain. It seems to be a combination of a play on words, as in vai, like oive, and also it's possible too, just the fact that it says it was in the day, that there's some kind of significance when you start with and it was in the day, that there's some event that happened. It may not be a tip off that it's a bad event, so Chazal probably needs more of a Masorah than just that to assume it's bad. But the point is that is one of the tools of understanding the Torah. When it says Vayhi, it's a Lashon of Tzar. So the Or HaChaim is trying to understand what is the Tzar that occurred. And he discusses many things, but there's one particular Tzar that's fascinating for us. And he points out, he says that perhaps another kind of Tzar was Moshe's Tzar. Now, what kind of tzar would Moshe experience? He says, "Ki ra gedulaso ugedulas zaro b'yad Aaron uvonav." He saw that his greatness and the greatness of his children were given over to Aaron and his children, right? Because we know that originally Moshe, there's a medrash that Moshe could have been the Kohen, and his onish, his consequence for being excessively resistant to Hashem's directive that he represent him and take the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, and his excessive resistance to that ended up with Aaron, who, you know, that Aaron is going to end up becoming the one. So the Or HaChaim here is saying a remarkable fact, that even though Moshe was very humble, they're still mixed in with the rejoicing of the Chanukah Sabayis, of the Shivas Yimei Miluim, mixed in with that rejoicing, the culmination on the eighth day. And actually, according to the Medrash, Moshe brought Karbonos on the first 7 days. Moshe was the one who brought the Ketores. He did all kinds of things. So he was kind of a Kohen up until the moment that Aaron and his sons were appointed. And so Moshe had this bad feeling. And the Or HaChaim says it was a little kinna that he had. And he goes on to say, V'hagam ki otza ma'oid b'tzidko subanova. Even though Moshe was very great and very strong in his righteousness and in his humility, right? We know this about Moshe. He says the following simple line, Halo kol lev chai margish. Is it not true that every living heart feels? He goes on to say, "Befrat b'tzar mitzvah yikara yikrasa erech umuflo hakazos." Especially, he shouldn't be. Especially, it's not surprising that he'd be jealous or feel bad that he was losing out on the kahuna, which is a great mitzvah. But that is the especially. But the first point that he says, a remarkable point, on the one hand, is completely and utterly commonsensical. There's no reason why we should assume that Moshe wasn't a human being and to assume that Moshe didn't have feelings. But we're also oftentimes uncomfortable with that designation, and a contemporary authority would be very uncomfortable saying that. However, fortunately for us, the Or HaChaim does say it. And he says, Halo kol lev chai margish. Is it not true that every heart feels? And even Moshe, in his greatness, and even Moshe, in his astounding humility, felt a tinge of jealousy of Aaron and his sons, that his legacy would not be as great. He would not have kahuna coming from his family line. So there we have one aspect of jealousy that's playing itself out on the day of the Chanukah Sabbayos. Then we have another interesting one as well, because there's many pshatim in what was the Esh Zara. See, the Aaron's sons, right, Nadav and Avihu, we know that they did something wrong, and because of that, they were punished and they were consumed by heavenly fire on the day of the Chanukah Sabbayos, on the day of the eighth day. There's different midrashim as to what they did, but the Torah calls it an Esh Zara, a strange fire. And the Yalkut Shimoni quotes a number of pshatim, and one pshat that the Yalkut Shimoni brings is that it was a spirit of gaiva and jealousy. Well, what was it? They were thinking to themselves, Masai Yamusu Shnei Zekenim Halalu, when will these two old fogies pass away? Meaning, Nadav and Avihu were thinking about their future and about their future leadership, and they're thinking to themselves, when are Aaron and Moshe going to finish their leadership and die so that we can take over? And you and I, we will take over. So they're going there's a machlokus. Ramban says they didn't go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Others, I believe, say that they did. But they're going into the Beis HaMikdash. They're encountering the Shekhinah, which one can imagine would have very little tolerance for the foibles and the imperfections of man. And so here they're having this horribly selfish, greedy thought. And they're thinking to themselves, hey, when's it going to be our turn? And this is what they're thinking on this moment of greatness. And because their thought was so incongruous with the Kedusha and the holiness of the place and of the moment, they suffered a consequence and they were consumed by a holy fire. So what's fascinating is that on this day of incredible and astounding holiness, the culmination of really the experience in the Midbar, the creation of the Mishkan where the Shekhinah would come, the human foibles are all over the place, and there's a virtual polar vortex of jealousy. Moshe's got this on his mind. Nadav and Avihu have that on their mind, and they're struggling with jealousy. And truth is, as Or HaChaim says, Halo kol lev chai markish. You know, the human heart. That's what the human heart does. It feels, and you can't completely avoid it. So I thought it would be good for us to meditate for a bit on jealousy, because it seems to be a theme running through this parasha. Now, there's another interesting discussion about jealousy in this week's parasha as well, coming from the Klei Yaakov. You see, there were two korbanos. There were two korbanos that were brought. The Jews brought, let's put it this way, Aaron brought Achatas and Olon Shlomim, I believe. I forget the exact order, but it's in the Psukim. And the Bnei Yisrael also, and Aaron brought Achatas and an Olah on behalf of the Bnei Yisrael. However, there is a difference because the korbanos were different between the Aaron brought, I believe, an eagle as a chatas. It's all in the psukim, but what the Klei Yaakov observes is he brings down the Torah's Kohanim. The Torah's Kohanim says that the pasuk, when it talks about the korban of the Jews, it says, El b'nei Yisrael tadaber lemor. You will speak to the Jewish people to bring the korban. So it sounds like almost that the chatas of the Jews, Aaron didn't need to bring, as if he wasn't involved in the chet. And there's a whole discussion about the difference between the chatas that Aaron brought and the chatas that the Jews brought, because the Jews committed the chet of ego, and so did Aaron, but Aaron's chet was not in thought, it was only in deed. There's a lot of discussion about that. But what the Torah's Kohanim zeroes in on is something else. It says, Ma ro Yisrael, lahaviyosim in Aaron. Why did the Jews have to bring a different chatas and a specific chatas? So The answer is, El Amar Lem Moshe, Atam Yesh Be'etchem Metchilav Yesh Be'etchem Sof. You have a sin in the beginning and a sin in the end. And what is that? So we'll see in a moment. But Aaron only has a sin, quote, at the end. So what are we talking about? What's the sin in the beginning? What's the sin in the end? The Torah's Kohanim says, B'tchila sh'nemar v'yishchatu sir izim. That's a pasuk in Bereishis Lamed Zayin. And that talks about the Shvatim when they threw Yosef into the pit and they wanted to make it appear as if he died by accident, they slaughtered a goat and they used the goat's blood to put onto his cloak, and then they took that to Yaakov. And then also they have the ego, right? So they have a sin in the beginning, which is the sin of Mechiras Yosef, trying to kill Yosef, and they have the sin at the end. Aaron, on the other hand, only had a chelik in the cheda ego. He didn't have a chelik in the sin of selling Yosef. So Kliyaka wonders what's going on over here. Quite the contrary. Aaron had a role in the chet of Yosef too, because we know that Levi was one of the hotheads of the Shvatim. Yaakov discusses this in his final words to them in Parshas Vayechi. Shimon v'Levi achim. He knows that Shimon and Levi were in cahoots, and they were the ringleaders in exacting their form of punishment and retribution against Yosef. So how could it be? Why are we saying that Aaron has nothing to do with the chet of Mechiras Yosef? So here's what the Klei Yakar points out. The Klei Yakar says that what really is the linkage anyway between, they call it, the Torah's Kohanim says that the Jewish people, they sinned in the beginning and in the end. It sounds like it's the same sin. What does Mechiras Yosef have to do with the Cheder Ego? Really, these two things don't seem related in any way. So the Klei Yakar says that there's a similarity in their root, because the root of the problem that the Shvatim had with Yosef was jealousy. They were jealous of him. And they created a whole elaborate rationale, and they made a Bezdin and all that. But at the root of it all is they were jealous of him. They were jealous of his intelligence, of the fact that his father, that their father loved him more, whatever it was. So they have jealousy. And he says, ultimately, the root of the Cheder Ego was also jealousy. On some level, the people could not tolerate Moshe's leadership. It's how you're talking. A person comes 6 hours late, even if their calculation was correct, which, right, we know according to the Medrash, their calculation was not correct. But even if their calculation was correct, their leader comes 6 hours late and they're already replacing him. So what the Klei Yakar says is they really weren't different than Korach. Just like Korach was jealous of Moshe's leadership and sought to usurp his leadership later, the Jews too, they couldn't tolerate Moshe's leadership. They were jealous. Why should he be special? So they'll put somebody else in charge, and then they'll be jealous of him too. That's human nature, right? That's what Owen Ben Pelos' wife actually said to him. She said, "Who are you going to do? You're going to replace Moshe with Korach, then you'll have Korach as your leader. What do you gain from it all?" But anyway, that is human nature. You're jealous of the person who is in charge. You want to get rid of him, even if you don't even have a possibility to become the leader. But vicariously, you'll appoint somebody else who you think represents you better until you get sick and tired of him, and then you'll try to overthrow him as well. So according to the Klei Yakar, the root of the Cheta Egel and the root of Mechiras Yosef was one and the same, and that was one of jealousy. And therefore, Aaron, in principle, Aaron did not have a jealous bone in his body. You'll recall that we discussed Moshe's jealousy earlier, and we discussed Nadav and Avihu's jealousy. We did not discuss Aaron's jealousy, right? Aaron, when he was told that Moshe would lead the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim, even though Aaron was the older brother, Hashem testifies, Beruacha v'samach belibo, right? He will see you and he'll be happy in his heart. He'll be thoroughly happy. There's another medrash that that's why he was zochot to wear the choshen. on his chest because of the purity of his heart. But in any case, Aaron did not have that problem with the jealousy, because Aaron didn't have the problem with the jealousy, so his only chet was a chet ha'egel. So that's why he had a different carbon. That's the way that Taras Kohanim could be understood according to the Kli Yagra. So, getting back to the story, we have jealousy as a theme running throughout the Chanukah Sabayis. There are people struggling with jealousy. There's tikkunim, there are karbonos that are trying to correct the jealousy. And so it behooves us to discuss jealousy. Now, the one of the Aseres HaDibros is Lo Sachmod, right, which is one should not covet, one should not desire that which belongs to his friend. Certainly not covet one's neighbor's wife, as the Pasuk is popularly translated. So this jealousy that we have, we struggle with looking at something else that somebody else has, something that we want, it's certainly very powerful. Once again, hello kol lev chai margish. Is it not true that every human heart feels? So we struggle with this. And actually, Ibn Ezra, on the Aseres HaDibros in Perachof Pasuk Yudalad, on Lo Sachmod, he raises the question. He says, Anoshim rabim yitamo al zos ha-mitzvah. Many people struggle and wonder about this mitzvah. Echi ha-odom shal yachmo davar yafu b'libo. How could you not desire something if you see it? you want it. How could the Torah legislate that you should not want something? It's so hard when you want something to not want it. What are you supposed to do? So he says, "Va'ata etan l'chol mashal." I'll give you a mashal how you can do it. Now, that's a little hard for us to understand because the mashal is dated, and it actually explains a lot of our difficulties, other boundaries too, right? But in feudal times, when you had a king, the commoners did not feel equal to the king. The commoners felt that there was some kind of divine right that the king was king, and we're talking about it with a Jewish king. Kosher king, but I'm talking about even a non-Jewish king, doesn't matter. They felt that there was some kind of divine right. And they felt themselves not equal, not like we feel today that we're all equal, but they felt themselves truly down to their core as inferior to the king. And if the king inspired people as such, they would even give up their lives for the king, you know, happily. They just felt that was their place and station in life. So Ibn Ezra says, imagine a common villager sees a princess. Do you think in a second he really desires her? Do you think that he would think to himself, oh, I might have a shot at marrying her or being with her? No. He says, even to the extent that he feels no desire, Ibn Ezra goes on to say, it's almost as if would a person want to grow wings and fly? Do they imagine that they could fly? Do they feel a desire to fly? Is that a crazy thing, according to Ibn Ezra? How could a person even think that they're going to fly? The same way, they're not going to think that they'll have access to this great princess when the person is so low. He goes on to say it's no different than the villager feels toward the princess like he feels toward his mother. His mother might be an attractive woman, but he feels no desire for her because he knows she's 100% off limits. There are social taboos, there are religious taboos. So he doesn't feel any desire for the princess. This is what Ibn Ezra says. So he says a person who has seichel and realizes that basically every single thing that counts in life, immaterial matters, right, belongs to Hashem, right? It's a kobi de shemayim, chutz meyirashemayim. Everything is in the hands of heaven, except for Yerushalayim, but things about your wealth and your strength and your health, these things, much of it, health is a discussion in the Gemara, which we won't get into, but these things, much of it is really, has to do with mazel. It has to do with what you were decreed to have. It's true with a lot of tefillah you can change your mazel, but the point is that this is the way things are. So a person doesn't need to feel bad or angry they don't have something, because it must be that's not what Hashem wants for him, and it's futile to even feel frustrated because it's not going to happen if it's not meant for them to have it. And that's how he says one is supposed to fight Lo Sachmod. Now, it's interesting because the Mishalim, I find it fascinating, the Mishalim that Ibn Ezra gives are much less meaningful in contemporary times. We don't feel less to our leaders, right? We feel that we're all equal, that we have equal rights because of the culture and society that we're in. We have much more opportunity and wealth. So, and not only that, he gives a muscle. Would somebody imagine they could grow wings and fly? Well, yeah, the Wright brothers did it, and others did it. And look at that. We not only do we grow wings and fly, but we fly to the moon. So there's something about our culture and our lifestyle. Obviously, there's many advantages to it, and I'm not suggesting we go back to Stone Age because of the dangers of technology and success. But it is interesting that I think it's harder for us to know our place. I think it's a lot harder for us to feel humility and know our place when actually we have tremendous amounts of power and individual strength. And we really could imagine anything and do it. So that's an interesting challenge for us. But nevertheless, that's Ibn Ezra's point, that the trick is to really understand your place. Now, I want to talk about the positive side of desire, too, the positive side of kinnah and jealousy. The Gemara in Bava Basra, I think it's Chaf Beis or Chaf Hei, the Gemara says, kinnah sofrim tarba chachma, that the jealousy amongst scholars increases wisdom, because that's a good jealousy. It's a jealousy for attainment and success in Yerushalayim and mitzvahs. Now, it's important to understand that when the Gemara says that, it doesn't mean petty jealousy, like two scholars who don't love the truth and are just trying to show off how much they know. They mean someone who really, really desires to attain the level that, let's say, he sees a colleague obtaining, because he too wants to grow in his Yerushalayim. He too wants to grow in his knowledge of Torah. That's what it's talking about. But it's also not just talking about Torah, it's talking about any spiritual attainment. So a desire to achieve something worthwhile, channeled in the correct way, that's a good kind of kinnah. The object of desire needs to be meaningful, but if the object of desire is meaningful, then the kinnah is a very important, powerful motivator for us to accomplish what we want. Now, it's also important to note that Marsha over there says that actually it says sofrim and not talmidei chachamim, because sofrim are a lower level. They could be petty, but leaving that all alone, but the bottom line is the Gemara does seem to be endorsing that what one could feel strong desire, even say a jealousy, towards something that's meaningful and worthwhile, not just a material attainment. And you know, let's talk about some neighbor's wife, right? The Gemara in Sanhedrin on Ayin Ham and Aleph goes into a whole interesting scenario of a person that felt that it basically was lovesick. He was so desirous of this woman that the doctors told the Chachamim that he's going to die if he doesn't get the object of his desire. And it's very interesting because the Chachamim don't in any way blame the guy. They don't say, oh, he should study more Musar. They take it at face value that for whatever reason he was really smitten with this desire. I guess, again, a kol lev chai margish, you know, every human heart desires. They didn't tell the guy he should study Mesil Sisharim. They actually accepted what the doctor said, and their belief was this man was in such a state of melancholy or desire, whatever you want to call it, that his health was at stake. And the whole discussion of the Gemara hinges on whether or not it's permitted to do it, because you have to know whether you're right, even though pikuach nefesh is dohakar Torah kula, right, even though pikuach nefesh, saving one's life, pushes away any restriction of Torah except for the three key ones, Avodah Zarah, Shfichas Damim, and Gilui Arayos, and what category did this situation fit into? And the Gemara goes into a situation where even she's a Pnuya, they don't allow it. Even if she's a single woman, and theoretically there's really a negligible prohibition, even just to look at her, they get into a whole thing, even to talk to her. Anyway, the point is they forbid it because Shlot Hiu Benos Yisrael Prutso. So the daughters of Israel shouldn't be treated like objects and be Prutso. So we don't let him do it. In the end, the guy was not allowed to do it. But there was a serious debate going on, and they certainly took it at face value that his desire was very difficult for him to deal with. And the Gemara raises one final interesting point. The Gemara says, if she's a penuya, why not marry her? Just let him marry her. And the Gemara says, no, because mayim genuvim yimtaku, forbidden, it's a pasuk in Mishlei, forbidden water is sweet, and his desire was of a nature of having something forbidden. And if he could not have that was forbidden, it wouldn't satisfy his desire. So we have an interesting dynamic over here, which is that the chase is very powerful. Now, addicts, in particular, sex addicts, there's something called cruising, which the addiction professionals understand that the state of arousal that the addict experience when they're cruising, which means when they're looking for the thing that they want. I don't want to trigger anybody, so I'm not going to describe various scenarios, but you understand that the hunt and the chase, whatever process that the addict goes through, is actually stronger and more powerful, more arousing than the actual fulfillment of the desire. Chazal also say, Kashin Hihuri Avera, Yosem in Avera, and this is no doubt what they mean. But that force, that desire for something that we don't have, and the amazing arousing quality of that is something, if you're married, you can turn that in a positive way. It's a very interesting thing. People will romance an object of their desire. They will woo, buy gifts for, treat like a queen, whatever they'll do it continuously to get that object of their desire. Once somebody's married, after a little while, they get bored and they stop the chase. And when they don't get what they want from their wife, whether it's something physical in the bedroom or something emotional or anything like that, when they don't get what they want, instead of understanding this as a chase, as this person needs to be wooed and romanced and courted, they end up getting frustrated and angry, like a broken toy that doesn't work. When the reality is that that's exactly what makes the experience enticing and exciting, right? So when a person is frustrated with their spouse, if they're not getting what they want, instead of looking at this person as someone who you can control and a broken toy that you can't fix and get all angry and frustrated, instead use all your power and your focus on the chase. Well, if your wife is not interested in being with you, or if your wife is not interested in being nice to you, there's a reason for it. You have failed, not her, because you always could look at the other person's problem. You'll never solve anything. You have to look at what your share of the problem is. You have failed in some way to romance this person, to make this person feel special, to make this person feel valued. You have stopped courting her. And you've lost an opportunity, because it doesn't even matter if you get your needs satisfied right away. It could take a long time to get your needs satisfied, because if you look at it as real courting and you look at it as a real chase and as mayim genuvim, not she's your wife and she belongs to you and you can do whatever you want and you're entitled to whatever you want, then you'll be frustrated. But if you look at it as mayim genuvim, which is forbidden fruit, why is it forbidden? Because you can't control her. You can't have access to her. You can all look up the Rashi on Shabbos and Kuf Mem Amud Beis, how Rav Chisda advises his daughters to be with their husbands, to hold back a little bit so they feel more desire. It's the chase that counts. Every frustration, every difficulty, every problem you have in your relationship, instead of getting angry and frustrated, turn it around and look at it as an opportunity and a challenge, that you have to find a way to woo this person, to romance this person, to entice this person. And then when you do that, you experience the power of kinna, but a good kinna, a kinna that moves you in the direction of shalom bayis and success.